So first I'd like to dedicate my words to my three teachers here at Jokoji, and Michael, and Jiro, and Greg. Denko A, a transmission of light, and much gratitude for keeping the light of the Dharma shining here at Jokoji so that people like me can step into it. When Michael invited me to give a little talk today, I was carried back to a time 17 years ago when I was a resident caretaker here briefly. Yeah. And there was a weekend sesshin conducted by a teacher named Catherine Tanas from the San Francisco, from the Santa Cruz Zen Center. And she brought her group to Jokoji at the time and began a weekend sesshin here. And the Tenzo hadn't shown up. And for some reason, she selected me to be the Tenzo for their first lunch. And I had never been Tenzo before, and I knew nothing about what that meant. I did know how to cook, which was a plus. And she gave me some ingredients and showed me the bowls. Told me what went into each of these bowls, and then left. Well, at the time, I guess I prided myself on being a really good cook, and took this as something of a challenge to serve 15 people. And I got really kind of wound up about it, and spent a lot of time thinking about what I wanted to prepare. And I felt something of the same feeling when Michael invited me to speak. I felt like I had to prepare a meal for my friends. And I spent a good bit of time thinking about something that would be tasty and nourishing, health-giving, easily digestible. And simple, which is a challenge for me. And realized that this practice of Oryoki, we talked yesterday about practices in the Zendo, and this practice of eating, and we do outside the Zendo, but sometimes inside the Zendo. And also tea, we do inside the Zendo, and also outside the Zendo. And then we also do these practices in restaurants and our living rooms and dining rooms and friends' houses. And so there's teaching here, and profound teaching. In fact, many of the words we use when we talk about eating seem to me to evoke our practice, you know. I taste things. And we digest things. we make them part of our bodies. Our bodies and minds. And we're nurtured by this practice. And we consume, we're consumed by it. And then we let it go also. It all goes. So this is a, this is my little meal for you. This is my little meal. Three bowls. This is my text. Seventeen years ago, I made very, I don't remember these two bowls so much. I think there were, was barbecued tofu in this one. But this one I remember very well, this little one. Because someone had brought a big bushel of plums, and I steamed those plums and put a little sugar syrup on them. And then what I remember doing, this is really outrageous, was I went into the Jikoji Gardens and picked little sprigs of mint, tiny little ones, and put one of those little sprigs of mint in each of those plums. Just gourmet treats. It was so precious. And I was so proud of myself. Everything was so beautiful. And I really slaved in the kitchen. I didn't have an assistant or anything. I just really was sweating in there. And just had this magnificent food for everybody. And then Catherine came. This was in the Zendo service. Catherine came into the kitchen, and she said, okay, it's lunchtime. You stay here. And I said, I stay here? I don't get to go to the Zendo and watch everybody? You know, looking at all these wonderful things that I slaved over, you know, and I'm here, the sweat is pouring down me, and filthy, and exhausted, and just so excited about this fantastic meal that I've made for everybody, and I have to stay in the kitchen. And she left, and I sat there fuming. I was furious. How dare she treat me this way? Doesn't she know how hard I work? Blah, 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 you know. And the smoke was coming out of my ears. I was so angry. And so I sat there, just doing what she told me to do, sitting in the kitchen. And then probably, I don't know how long it was, she reappeared. And she said, okay, now you come to the Zendo. Here's this little tray. little bowls on. You come to the Zendo now, and I'll show you what you're to do. And you know what the tens have done. It comes in. Comes in and serves the Buddha. I knew nothing. I come in, and I come in with this, and I look around. All these Buddhas sitting there. I started crying. Couldn't control myself. That even today, that memory of walking into the Zendo and becoming so clear right at that moment, I'm serving the Buddha. That's what it's about. I'm serving Buddhas. And as soon as that became clear, I became Buddha. All my arrogance, all my ego just seemed to just pour out of me with these tears. Catherine gave me this gift of teaching. Didn't know me at all. Of not yet. First of all, not yet. You stay in the kitchen. Not yet. You stay in the kitchen until you get clear. Until you can get clear. And Oryoki is all about not yet. No, first, we pass the gamasha. And then we chant, and then we bow, and then we do this knot, and then we... Oh, no, not yet. Not yet. Can't eat yet.
I'm hungry.
Hungry. Look at that, but not yet, not yet, not yet. So there's this incredible space created around this, this grasping mind. Hunger. I want that. Now, of course, it's not just that pickle. It's that person. That thing. That life. That fill in the blank. Not yet. Wait, wait. Just wait. Profound teaching. Not yet. You wait long enough. You wait long enough. Something happens to you. Maybe you get clear. And that moment when I got clear, it was as if it was this right view. Okay, my head got on straight. Before the wheel starts to turn, the wheel of Dharma, yeah, it's got to be on right. It's got to be on right on its axle. You know, it's just right view. Okay, now it can go. Okay, so this is funny. My daughter usually meets me at the airport, and because I tend to be the caregiver for my friends and family, she always tells me that when I come to California, I'm going to be the queen, and that I'm going to be taken care of. This time at the airport, she went into this Halloween store and actually purchased one of these crowns. And she stood there at the baggage claim and presented me. And I wore it. I wore it all through the airport. And people were looking at me. And I thought, what a fantastic idea. If we all went around with crowns on. If everybody, because people were looking, oh, yeah, yes, there's the queen. There's the queen. And but if we all had a halo or, I mean, a crown would do. Maybe we could start a new fad or something. But it was as if when I came in, everyone was Buddha. Everyone had a crown on. How different our life would be if we got our heads on straight and we saw, oh yeah, we're all wearing crowns. We're all Buddhas. Just thought that was such a lovely moment. So getting your right view. Once you've sort of got it, then then you can see. You can actually see something. You can see food. And usually we don't, right? We're just inhaling our food. But we've got a lot of space here, and we've got our heads on right, and we can look and see what's there. Just as it is, perfect. This is as is, as is. I belong to a, it's called a community-supported agriculture farm. And about a month or so ago, I went to pick up my vegetables in a basket, and I usually transfer them to a cooler. I was picking up vegetables. And then a tomato came up, and this tomato was all lumpy, and it had a crescent-shaped scar on it. I picked it up. I looked at the woman who was distributing this produce, and I said, you know, you can have this back. I said, I don't really... It just didn't seem like an appropriate thing to be putting in the market basket. It just was too misshapen, and it had this scar. And she took the tomato and she looked at it and smiled at me. She said, and she looked at the scar and she said, "This tomato is smiling at you." And I said, "Well, you can have it anyway." And I proceeded home. And that act of giving back the tomato haunted me for days. And I realized that I really had no idea of what it meant to say that each thing is perfect as is. See, as is, if we saw as is on a tag, we would immediately think there's something wrong with it, right? But our practice is everything just as it is. And I had an idea. That was the first mistake. I had an idea that I didn't even know I had of the ideal tomato. This tomato was very far from that. I didn't even see that tomato. All I saw was my concept of the tomato, and that didn't fit. And I wanted nothing to do with it. Actually, her concept of the tomato was also, even though it was a little more polite than mine, it's still, she was seeing a smiling tomato. And that wasn't quite it, maybe, either. But what I realized was that I was carrying around a lot of ideals. Not only the ideal tomato, but the ideal body, the ideal partner, the ideal child, the ideal career, the ideal. And of course, there's no such thing as. Nothing in reality is going to ever measure up to the concept. I think that makes us suffer. And when Buddha, under the Bo tree, said, "Everything has Buddha nature," I think he was able to see what was real. If there was a tomato there, he would have seen it as is. He saw what was real. Not some idealized image of reality. And how that those concepts make us wiggle around. It's not good enough. Measuring everything against these concepts and judging against these concepts. There's no such thing as the tomato I had in my mind. So, as is. Perfect. Not the ideal tomato, but perfect as is. So I'm sort of going in reverse order. The biggest for the best. No best, just as is. Just three bowls. This, no trace. No trace. One of our Sangha members at Owan, which is where I practice sometimes, brought her little baby over, almost a year old, and to visit, and I was carrying the baby around. And I started to do what I used to do with my own daughter. Napkin, taking her around. Recorder. Bowl, table, lights, fork, key. He's wandering around the room. And then we come to the mirror in the room. Lucy! 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 And she's... Lucy! Look at Lucy! Look how pretty Lucy is! And I kept insisting. Lucy! Look. And then another aha moment. What am I doing? What am I doing here? I am doing exactly the opposite of what my practice is all about. And what the entire culture is destroying. It's just like, this is Lucy and this is everything else. There was the moment of recognition. And of course, Lucy was just one with everything. She was just so with it all. And she was, with a little bit of my help, on her way to separation. Oh my. So here's our practice. So we digest it all. We just eat it all. Eat it all up. Digest it and leave no trace, no trace. Just, of course, Lucy's place is before this, because now she begins leaving traces inevitably, as we all do, and so now it's going to be a whole new experience of cleaning up after yourself, because you're going to have to do it. And so this is profound practice of the fire, as we say, we cook on the cushion, we cook ourselves up, cook until we no trace, clean it all up, and then put the bowls back together. And it's all one package. And this oryoki, this just enough. How do we know? How do we know when we've had enough? Enough pain. Enough pleasure. Enough of this experience. Enough of that person. Enough of these possessions, maybe tea bowls, enough tea bowls, mm-hmm. Never have enough tea bowls. How do we know? I truly think that this enough, just enough, is the core of what it means to speak about the middle way. How do we know? We know. We know. Make a lot of space. Not yet. As is. No trace. Now it's clear. No one has to transmit this to us. No one has to tell us when enough is enough. Just practice, and we know. And when the meal is over, And the poles are quietly put together and packaged up. You know, we should feel light. Not like Thanksgiving dinner, not heavy, but light and healthy and deeply satisfied. Not so much this pleasure, but deep satisfaction. So, enough. Enough. So I'd like to invite you to talk about some of your own experiences, perhaps with Oryoki, perhaps with being king or queen for the day, or eating